And welcoming back, I'm your host Shay once again, recurring co-host John is back on here.
Always glad to be here.
So we are diving into one of our action movie favorites, kind of a subtle horror guy as well, Jonathan Mostow. Mm-hmm. So reading off his resume, it's a big one. If you know that name, trust me, you have heard it. You totally have heard it. So. He was yet another guy who just has been kind of a mercenary, just all kinds of movies and shows. You know him from all kinds of thrilling escapades. He's from Connecticut and trained at the American Repertory Company and the Lee Strasberg Institute for acting. He worked on the 80s horror anthology indie Fright Show in 85 for the Dr. Doberman segment. He then followed it up with by releasing Beverly Hills Body Snatchers for Cannes Film Festival. There is where he also got to cameo in the film himself. He then co-produced the David Fincher mystery film The Game for PolyGram Propaganda Films. Yes, that's the name of it, company. And then got on everyone's radar with the 1997 psycho thriller Breakdown, which featured physical car stunts and was noted for strong acting by Kathleen Quinlan and lead star Kurt Russell, as well as echoing many elements of films such as Duel and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He followed it up with the popcorn World War II submarine film U-571, and then got on everyone's radar big time with Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines in 2003. He was slated to direct, but had to walk away and just serve as a producer on 2008's Hancock. And then followed up with the Blade Runner, Star Trek-esque Bruce Willis comic book adaptation, Surrogates. He then wrote the story for the Jennifer Lawrence psycho thriller, House at the End of the Street, which had been completed in 2010 and not released till 2012. Co-produced the Gerard Butler chick flick, Playing for Keeps. And most recently produced and directed The Hunter's Prayer, starring Sam Worthington and Odiah Rush. He has directed select episodes of From the Earth to the Moon and the pilot for TNT's The Last Ship. He's also directed an Unsold TV pilot and also produced the HBO original movie, or the Showtime original movie, Flight of Black Angel, which deals with fighter pilot going postal and his training officer who can stop him from unleashing the doomsday weapon. So that's a lot to unpack. John, when did you, was it Breakdown or T3 which got him on your radar?
Well, I can safely say this for him. His film Terminator 3 is actually the first R-rated film I saw in the theater, so.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the first for me growing up, and that wasn't including, you know, ones that were modified for TV, but.
Yeah.
This dude is apparently, he's kind of big in the comic book industry. He did a comic book called The Megas, released in 08 by Virgin Comics.
Never heard of that.
He just had an alternate sci-fi history scenario. But yeah, I'm kind of like just about every one of these late 90s, early 2000s guys. He does a lot of like it or hate it movies, and it seems like he's mainly just been noted enough for, he's just been the go-to guy for knowing how to get stuff done on time and have some practical explosions and car chases and gunplay. He seems to, I think it was Surrogates that kind of did him in. I have nothing against that movie. I know you've been kind of bored by it. I have seen it once, twice. It's just straightforward cyborg action. with a interesting, unusual supporting role by James Cromwell and Ving Rhames. It was just kind of one of those, it was by Touchstone Pictures, and that's kind of when they were kind of doing less pre, you know, Disney buying Fox and relying on them for their input.
That's true.
It was definitely one of the last ones where Bruce Willis seemed involved, but I didn't think of it as a Bruce Willis movie. I just thought of it as just, I think the main appeal was seeing Rosamund Pike and Radha Mitchell in it, and Bruce was just the lead, but he wasn't playing an emotionless, you know, John McClane type persona. He was just a guy finding out the truth about some cyborg duplicates. It was kind of more of a, I would call it kind of a Twilight Zone episode with some action near the end, but
I guess I just expected a Bruce Willis movie. That's why I was disappointed.
No, all good. And yeah, it flopped big time. But what's funny is a lot of critics who I thought would have hated it liked it. And then a lot of other ones who never liked sci-fi, I think they just railed on it enough. And that's what made him now kind of just the TV video on demand guy, which is a shame. But trust me, guys, it's happening to just about everybody. If you're not a Marvel or Star Wars or, I don't know, Oscar winning A24 guy. This is unfortunately how the market is going.
Which is sad to see.
No, it sucks. But it's kind of just laughable all in and of itself. It's just like, what is going on with movies?
I've been asking that question for years now.
Yeah. So the first one, Terminator 3 was technically the first one I saw, but U571 was probably the second one I saw. Breakdown was nonstop playing on USA Network all the time, and I've come to respect it more recently, but it's I think my issue is it's kind of doing a lot all at once, and it really gets going in that last hour, basically, finally. That's after fair. A lot of running around and not knowing what's going on. It's just a frustrating movie I have, but the stunts are great.
I appreciate that because, well, it's Kurt Russell playing, you know, what I would call like a realistic character.
For once.
He's not yeah, playing, you know, the tough, you know, hero or the action hero even. He's just a normal guy that unfortunately finds his wife kidnapped and he has to go save her.
Basically it. And
I thought it worked well for that premise. Like it didn't overstay its welcome like some movies would.
I think it's just the villain was kind of confusing, like who's the main bad guy in this whole scheme of things. But I'm just glad that now it's, you know, this guy keeps things moving very fast. He doesn't worry about dialogue being a standout or being too cute for his own good. I know many people who hate Terminator 3, but I think more people generally like it than those who hate it.
I never had a problem with that. Even as a kid, I never had a problem.
I think a lot of people generally liked it, but I know some people found the ending controversial because it was just so grim. And I was like, well, it's a pretty ballsy ending. And I kind of got to applaud him just for that alone.
Agree. And, well, plus,
the CGI was always going to date, but it's not outrageously bad like some other movies where it just feels like they were just playing around and that was the only standout at the time. I mean,
it was not like the other sequels, though. The CGI got progressively worse.
Oh, yeah. Like, and that's why I was so crazy. I'm like, Industrial Light and Magic, what are you doing? But with his earlier movies, I having seen Flight of Black Angel today and Beverly Hills Body Snatchers, those are just so totally different movies. But this kind of reinforces that he's that kind of a guy. You can't really pigeonhole him in one particular area. And I will applaud him for just not having to rely on necessarily word of mouth. I think he's just a guy who gets everything done on time, but he doesn't feel robotic like some of these other guys who are asked to do a cheap chiller or thriller.
He has like a sense of pacing.
In fact, like Terminator Free gets very gory, surprisingly, at moments when you least expect it.
Yeah.
Kind of more
horror. Two or three scenes, which I didn't expect.
Right. Someone gets his fucking kind of return to the whole heart punching.
Yeah.
I
think that's what surprised me when we watched it years ago. And I was like, damn, I saw this in the theater as a kid. Wow.
It seems like he's just been attached to just so many different projects, and he was fortunate enough to do an interview last year for Vulture in 2021. And he was apparently, he noted how he was developing the game before it ultimately went to David Fincher. And he originally wanted his Breakdown co-star, Kurt, to be the lead in it before it went to Mike Douglas.
That would be interesting, at least. You know, I'm fine with how it is, because that's still my favorite David Fincher film. So
I definitely got to rewatch it. But yeah, his connection, I guess, in the door was just working for Dino De Laurentiis, who produced, you know, Breakdown, and, you know, legendary producer. So I wonder if that got around to Arnold and that, you know, for Carolco Pictures, you know, or T3, but I don't know. I do recall seeing a Tourist World Stunt Award clip, as well as just Arnold at like some awards show honoring Jonathan Mostow, basically saying he is, and you know, Arnold's going to do his usual ego-headed stroke, but it was interesting as how he just kept hitting on. He goes practical. He's all about this. And so I was like, interesting. He's really hitting on that. So I think that is kind of his kick in the door. He's just an old school kind of genre director. I mean, U571 got a lot of critique. I just always, it was another one. It's like, I couldn't get a straight answer. I'd see people say, oh, it's so inaccurate. And then I'd see other people say, but it's a really good submarine movie. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to see it. It's got an all-star cast that includes then unknown Matthew McConaughey, John Bon Jovi, Harvey Keitel. I can't lose. And obviously, it's not Das Boot. And I know David Ayer, you know, Training Day and Street Kings director wrote it, and he described it as a mercenary job, saying he was disappointed, would have changed it to be more accurate. But I, you know, it's really, I don't think it did any harm compared to other movies.
Well, you can clearly see the influence, the interference, I mean, from some producers.
Yeah, totally. In this same Vulture interview, he's asked on why he demonstrates an incredible confidence and expertise with machines, cars, trucks, cranes, submarines. How did he achieve it? He replies, to me, if the audience understands why they were in the space, they're going to appreciate and understand the scene more. When I was a kid, I used to play with toy cars and trucks, and you either had the Matchbox cars, which had a certain scale, or you had your Tonka trucks, which had a completely different scale. Sometimes I'd get together with other kids in the street, and we'd be playing with Matchbox cars, and suddenly they bring out the big Tonka truck and start playing with that. And I'd be like, no, no, you can't do that. He says, I think I just intrinsically have a sense of self-discipline about the clarity and scale of these action sequences. He also notes that the very dark ending for Terminator 3 was only accomplished because it was an independent film. It was independently financed, you know, it was distributed by, you know, Warner Brothers and Sony overseas, but the studios themselves weren't involved in the making of the movie. So only one person at Time Warner and one person at Sony would have a copy of the script. It had to be kept in the safe and no one was allowed to read it. So they got to read it ahead of time and deciding ahead if they wanted to co-finance. And once he was done with the movie, he invited them to come to a screening and showed the film. And that was it. And he notes how it was amazing to be doing a $200 million movie without the studio nervously looking over his shoulder.
Which is very rare for that to happen.
It kind of came and went. Like, when it came out, like, people have been talking about it for years, but it was just one of those where I just never... I think it got... It did pretty well considering the fact that, you know, just by the name alone, many people were going to check it out. Yeah, the only thing I see people giving it now is just is that he basically, I'm sorry, I cannot speak tonight. The only thing that I've ever heard anyone take issue probably is just there's a bit too much goofy humor at times, but it's so brief. And I don't know, I repeat talk to the hand, even though it's already a common phrase.
Yeah, it's just the one Only like one comedic bit I was not a fan of, him putting on the pink sunglasses. That's like the
He
only.
does claim he heard something complimentary from James Cameron about T3 after it came out.
I never heard that then.
And he had a couple of phone conversations subsequent to that because he'd asked if he Jonathan wanted to direct a movie that James was producing. And
Really?
he thinks it was two different films, actually. Doesn't remember any other specifics. I thought I could have sworn he bashed it when it came out without actually seeing it, just because he was just so mad that they were continuing it. But what do I know? He complimented from what he saw. Take anything James says with a grain of salt. He applauded
That's true.
Salvation, and then he did a promo for Genesis, but I'm pretty sure no one bought into that because Genesis was bottom of the
Yeah.
barrel. He just seems to have kind of much like Graham Yost and Richard Rodad and even Steven D'Souza, just some of these genre filmmakers and writers who just seem to have just kind of vanished because I don't want to say vanished, just stuck in direct just development hell.
Well, I mean, his case is because of T3, because there are still some fans to this day that say it's one of the worst Terminator films, even though, like I said, we still have Genesis out there. It's
Oh yeah.
ridiculous.
He apparently was noting in a 2021 interview with Cinema Retro that he had actually been tapped at one point to do another version of Stephen King's short story Trucks, even though it was already done as the Maximum Overdrive in that 1997 TV movie. I
I could see him pulling that off, considering Breakdown.
think that's just that. It's just once he did Breakdown, everyone wanted to say, hey, can you do some other high speed car chase movie? I mean, there is a car chase in Surrogates, and I guess you could just describe the sub of U571 itself as a freaking, vehicle movie. He's just having to do all this close quarters fights, and I don't know how he achieved that. That's another one where a lot of people note the stunts, but I've never really seen any making of how they did what they did.
I don't think I've seen making up for that one either. At least not from my member. It's interesting that he came up with the story for that Jennifer Lawrence film, because, well, as somebody who's not even a fan of that movie at all, and I'm sure he didn't write the script. I think he just came up with the story, did he? He
Oh,
didn't write it,
for
but
which one?
the house at the end of the street.
Yeah, that was kind of a meh. Like, it was well shot and everything, but it just didn't have anything memorable. It just kind of
He
was a
basically
quick,
was trying to be like a modern psycho, if
yeah,
I
kind of just
remember
run
correctly.
around. And he does say here on the Cinema Retro interview that he's very inspired by Alfred Hitchcock and The Shining, describing it as one of the most beautiful horror films he'd ever seen. And he also know actually no, that's the person interviewing him. He's just taught saying he's a big he pretty much all started when he saw Hitchcock's The Lady Vanishes.
Okay.
But yeah, he's other movies he likes. He noted how he did the commentary with Kurt Russell for like a DVD, and
I still gotta
he
look
doesn't
that up
watch many
then.
movies all the way through. Goodfellas is one of his favorite movies. But yeah, no, he's just another guy who's kind of everywhere.
I mean, unfortunately, he has, like we said, he hasn't gotten a lot of work after Hunter's Prayer. I know that's been largely forgotten,
Well, and
but
I think that's
that's
just it.
definitely
He his giant style is basically all about keep everything moving, and you're only as good. I don't want to say as your plot twist. You're only as good basically as just the excitement on display. I guess because he that's basically what he focuses on, but he doesn't want to. And he notes also in a IGN 03 interview that the reason he didn't have Edward Furlong even come back as John Connor. He noted the whole reason he was interested in doing the movie wasn't because he wanted to make a film to blow stuff up. He wanted to make films that he thought could tell a good story in a psychologically different place in his life. Biologically, he could show the same character, but psychologically could show how they were different. And then made a bunch of allusions to the franchise compared to how Silence of the Lambs went to Hannibal. And the dude's definitely a movie buff. And I mean, Hunter's Prayer was interesting, I guess, because it was just, it wasn't trying to be like John Wick or Equalizer. It was just trying to be kind of a simple, like, witness protection meets an assassin anti-hero.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a better role for Sam Worthington, because he had just seemed to have just been just continually plagued and just staring empty-minded at the screen.
It was actually a film that gave him something to do rather than just...
Yeah, instead of just yell endlessly or take his shirt off. Apparently, I think it was called For the Dogs originally, and Philip Noyce was, you know, a clear and present danger and Dead Calm fame was supposed to do it.
I think I did read that somewhere. I'm not sure if they explained why he dropped out. Something happened. I'm not sure.
So, I mean, if this is it, I really don't think he's going to be shit on except by people who just hate T-Free with a passion. I really don't. I don't have any issue with him. I don't think he's life-changing, but I'd put him as a top action director of the 80s or 90s and 2000s.
Well, he's one, like I said, that had a sense of pacing to his films. He was competent in the action.
Yeah.
He didn't focus so much on the shaky cam aspect that some filmmakers would do.
They don't. Totally. Much like Noyce, even freaking Richard Fleischer and Antoine Fuqua and Clark Johnson, all these other beloved guys. Who's another one who does R-rated actioners now? Martin Campbell, we talked about. You know, it's just
Martin Campbell.
People who love just doing suspense and just giving something for their entire cast to do. I think I did see something about how he was attached. What did I see he was attached to do?
Apparently it's a drama. He's attached to him. But he's the writer, but he's also the writer as well. On Phoenix, the Migrant Offshore Aid Station.
Interesting. So he's going back to espionage, overseas intrigue.
Nobody's been attached to that as of right now. So I'm not sure if that gets made. We'll see.
Probably arguing over who the star is.
You sell your movie nowadays. Sometimes. It depends.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even The Muppets vs. Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Well, that fits his style. Some directors, they can be chosen for the wrong films, and it clearly shows. And I don't think that's exactly happened to him yet. I mean, besides, at least to me, so I guess, but I've only seen that once, so.
It's definitely not a Cyborg movie that offends anybody.
True.
There's so many more where it's just like, dude, they're trying to be like the Terminator, Blade Runner, and Universal Soldier, and you're just like, yeah, just make it stop. So apparently, yeah, Mustow, along with Tony Scott and Alex Proyas, were attached to Quantum of Solace, James Bond sequel. So at one point,
I'm shaking all those and stuff. Who they got for Quantum of Solace, but that's a whole other discussion.
I like the action. I don't like the villain in that.
I don't even like the action in that, but like I said.
I dig it. You've seen it once.
Twice, actually.
Oh, jeez.
I gave it another chance before No Time to Die came out. And yeah, even worse the second time.
I like the conspiracy. I think my main issue is Mr. White just gets away at the end of the day, and he's kind of like the only interesting villain in that whole Craig saga. But Craig rewriting all his dialogue when he's not a writer is pretty lame.
Yeah, and well, that song sucks too. That's a, like I say, that's a whole other discussion.
Oh,
about that.
Definitely something I wish didn't have to hear in any of his movies. It's like, I don't need to hear any Bond songs anymore. Oh.
They'll still do it. It's tradition. So.
Yeah, it's goddamn tradition. I'll at least applaud him for not, you know, other than one franchise, which was pretty much an excuse to just, I mean, anyone else would have just been too much about dealing with studio interference, making an ego head star happy. He hasn't been, I'm sure he's been attached to just about anything from a buddy movie or even a video game film, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I remember him being attached to any of those. I actually didn't realize he was attached to Hancock at one point. That's interesting.
Yeah, its whole history is very interesting, how it changed like a few different studios. But yeah, he just Dino De Laurentiis was able to find some indie talent, and he was able to pick his brain and give his word, and he just got on. Apparently he even sticks by it, saying T-Free is the last good successful sequel.
Which, oh, I would agree.
I like Dark Fate, but that's just me.
I'm mixed on Dark Fate, but I don't hate it like most people. But it has its problems, severe problems, but it's not Jenna shit, that's what I call it. I keep calling that, folks. I'm sorry. That's just my nickname for it.
Yep. Sorry, not sorry. Okay, well. Either way, I mean, I just can't find any other news about him, but seems like He's just continually just staying busy, and he just has vaguely mentioned that he's had just like some other stuff long in development, and he's been happy for any chance he's actually been able to.
Well, at least he acknowledged that. And I'd be curious, but he also has some development. So yeah. Hopefully that can come to fruition at some point.
We'll see. Some point. Oh, here's another thing. 2020. Helm biopic on a migrant offshore aid station founder. Is that the same thing you were mentioning?
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning.
Oh, shit. Okay. He's working with the executive producers of 13 Hours in Pearl Harbor. Michael Bay wasn't available.
I guess not. Not for that. Well, he's doing his own thing, so that's why.
Well, other than that, what do you have coming up action-wise that you want to discuss?
Well, there's plenty of ones I plan to review at some point later on. And of course, now that it's October at the time of recording, I'll be having two of my reviews coming out soon. The Seventh Sign and The Final Terror. So look out for those when they come out.
Seems like there's a bunch of crazy shit happening.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Constance Wu notes that the producer of Fresh Off the Boat harassed her. Bill Paxton's family settles wrongful death lawsuit. Chloe Grace Moretz flies to Family Guy meme. Jeez.
And they have Bill Paxton's family, Jesus.
Yeah. Huh. Keep seeing ads for MacGruber. I'm just not interested.
I never was, so.
Even that one day is awesome.
Yeah, my more forte. I never cared for that character.
Oh, here's something. So. Jonathan Mostow was attached to a 2009 movie version of Submariner. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's dead.
Yeah.
It's back when they were still not figuring out comic book movies, and now it's oversaturated, so it'll be around a while.
Sure, they'll take any comic book film that anybody makes now, even if it was low budgets. Maybe we'll see. That depends.
I will applaud him also. Apparently, on Joe Blow, he replied to everyone just giving him shit about the inaccuracies of U571. And he's like, it's a work of fiction. I have no intention of stealing any credit for daring exploits by courageous men. I didn't really gather anything else about it. It did come off as just historical fiction. It's like, yeah, something like this could have worked. Would it have been by the Brits instead of the US? Sure. But who cares? It's just a Guns of Navarone type movie.
That's what I was trying to be. Of course, for some people.
I guess the opening.
Has to be realistic.
Maybe. The opening must have just pissed someone off, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. But, you know, some people, everything has to be realistic nowadays, so.
Even then, it's like no one knows the line. People who get upset at realism will still gladly go to see a Fast and Furious movie. And I'm like, but that movie doesn't have any tone or any.
No, it doesn't.
One minute I'm supposed to be reacting, the next minute bad rappers are making jokes, and yet they're not well delivered, question mark.
No. Just useless appearances by Kurt Russell.
So, once again, a 2012 article claims on the film stage that Jonathan Mostow was to direct a suspenseful movie called A Smart, Stylish Ride, packed with shocking twists that will give you nightmares. A paranoid thriller called Still of Night, starring Michelle Monaghan and Susan Sarandon. Never happened.
I was intrigued. But wonder what happened there.
It was set for a likely 2013 in August release. So yeah, he's in development hell. I think he just has to just fire his agent because whoever's repping him is just not doing a good job. I do have to say, though, for TV pilots, The Earth to the Moon is kind of underappreciated and will appeal to fans of Apollo 13. But it was just kind of a big thing in 98 of HBO. But Last Ship, I mean, it was a little uneven in that pilot, but it, again, it just kept me going. I was like, okay, this isn't anything I thought it would be. That I'm going to, the next thing you know, it lasted 6 years on the air and I've watched every episode. It's my summer show. And it seems like he must be just, that's what he's doing. He's just keeping all kinds of connections close by.
Well.
Oh. Fire Agent Mostow. Pretty cool.
Please do that. That would help you a lot.
Just saying. Just saying.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.